Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. As I've mentioned before, December is my month to honor Hawaii Tokata, who brought Reiki from Japan to the Hawaiian Islands and eventually came to the mainland, which is what is called the continental United States, and began to teach there. And from this progress of her teaching, the world has received the gift of Reiki. Of course, there were other masters in Japan, some of whom have become well known now in the Reiki world, but for many, many years, actually for decades, Hawaii Tokata was the person that people knew about in the Western world and knew about in relationship with Reiki. I have with me today Vivian Kimura. She's lives in near Honolulu, and she was a student of my grandmother's. And when I first heard about Vivian, I thought that I would meet somebody who was very much older than I am, and I'm 63 now. But Vivian is my age, and I was a little surprised. And so she received Reiki. Let's see, in somewhere in the mid-1970s. So we'll come to Vivian and hear your story. So Vivian, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here, to be able to talk to your listeners and just impart some of the experiences I've gained using Reiki.
Uh-huh. So can you tell us, how did you first learn about Reiki?
Well, oddly enough, the Asian type of philosophies of health, like Qigong, Tai Chi, Judo, those type of modalities of health and discipline were always interests of mine. And I've met some of my good friends through these types of classes. And one of the times I had thought about this class was after my daughter was born. And she was born in 1977, so I called my cousin and I asked him, you were there, and we went to meet Reiki, Hawaii Tokata, up at University of Hawaii to learn about Reiki, didn't we? He goes, yes, he says, because at that time his father was ill, and so when I brought up these kinds of topics, which he was already interested in as well, he was interested in going and learning about what Dr. Tokata had to say about this, Dr. Hawaii Tokata had to say about
right.
this.
Right. So I understand that in the latter years of her life, and she would have been 77 then at the time, mm-hmm. Because she was born in 1900, so it makes it really easy for me, that she used to teach through the University of Hawaii, or at least give lectures there.
Yes, and I think it was like how they have the outreach kind of interest.
Oh, like
type
an extension.
Right. And then anybody who was interested in the community had a source they could go to listen and this type of thing. And then on top of that, so then somehow or another we exchanged phone numbers or, you know, I told her I was very interested in taking her first degree Reiki. And at that time, I encouraged my father and my mother and my husband and myself, we all attended this class of Mrs. Tokata's. And this is where I met another good friend who lives just around the corner from Caroline here in Honolulu. And she's ill today, otherwise she would be here with us as
right,
well.
Right.
But we've kept up those people with whom our interests are great have kept up with each other over all these years. We
wow.
may not see each other every year, but we think about each other and we know that they're there for us
right.
when we need them.
So your daughter's birth was a kind of impetus for you to go looking. So can you tell me about your daughter? She was quite a special child.
Mm-hmm. My daughter's name was Celeste Ka'imi Kalealoha Mitsue Kimura.
Mm-hmm.
And my children all have names that are kind of like very important for the aspect of whatever the name was. Like Celeste was for heavenly, Kalealoha was child surrounded by love, Mitsui was light. And in this case, even how she got her name was very interesting, because I asked my mother-in-law to give me 10 boys' names and 10 girls' names in Japanese, and she gave me 25 names, all female.
That's great.
So I was like, okay, Stan, what are we going to do if it's a boy? But my mother-in-law must have known something else.
Uh-huh.
So when we think about Mitsue, she goes, oh, that's my best friend's name, Mitsue. And she's a Catholic nun. And I'm like, okay, in Japan now, because most people in Japan are Buddhist.
Yeah.
But it's her best friend in Japan who was a Catholic nun. And when you look at the word, it also means that it can be spiritual light, not necessarily just light, but spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Celeste's name. Now, when she was born, we did not know she was handicapped. Consequently, over the years, we found out that she lived to be about 15 years old. She was non-walking, non-talking, completely dependent. So she, at the time she passed on, she was about 100 pounds. And people would say, how do you manage? And I say, well, you know, it's like life. You start with 10-pound bag rice, and it goes up to 20-pound bag rice. And before you know it, this child has now gotten to be 100 pounds, and it's something you've done all these years,
right,
which was for 15 years for us.
Wow.
But
what was the condition called?
She had she was severely multiply handicapped. That's what they considered it to be. She had a microcephalic, which is the brain did not develop, so she had a very small head size. She also had microophthalmia, which means her eyes were not developed at all. And if you were to look at her, you would always think she's sleeping.
Uh-huh.
So people would say, do you think she hears you? Or do you think she's there? Or, you know, that type of thing. And I would say, well, you cannot assume the child is not there and the child is not listening or the child is not with you. So you automatically try to do what you can. Come, it's time to eat. I've made you your oatmeal, and I know it's not too hot. Clink, clink, clink on the bowl, you know, and can you smell it? You bring the spoon up to the nose with the food, that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
So we had to work on those senses of hearing, smell, touch, those type of things. She hated to have her face wiped. You know, I'd have to bring the warm towel up to her chin, and I'd say, okay, we got to wipe your face now. And she would kind of be drawing back at the same time I'm trying to put the towel on her face. So she just was very adversive to having her face wiped.
Well, that's so interesting, because I think when I've been around very small children, they all have something very clear that they don't like. And sometimes it's so unusual what they pick out not to like, and it's interesting that she had this also. So it feels like she wasn't just not there.
Yes.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
That's
like
right.
She had there was something there.
That's right.
So interesting.
And this time we would go, Celeste, how are you, Celeste? And she would actually smile, and we think that was a true smile, not just a smile like they say little babies sometimes have gas. And they
Smell, right.
So we do think that as she was progressing along throughout her life, that, you know, we would use her name and she would smile periodically. And sometimes she wouldn't smile periodically, but about the only way she could really communicate with us was if her diaper was red and I hadn't changed it often enough, or was too slow with food or something, you know, she would say, call. I said she'd be calling us by going, ah, and before you know it, the ah came higher and louder. And so I would say, we're coming, you know.
So she could communicate in that way.
I think so. But, you know, like anything else, it's intuitive from a parental standpoint, in that you have to be aware that your child is like this and be listening
right.
for the child too, you know,
right.
because other people would just say, come on, let's get into the car. And they'd hurry up and they'd get into the mm-hmm. car. And I always think those people with normal children never realized how lucky they were, because for us to go anywhere with Celeste, we had to a lot more time to get her into yeah. the chair and into the car and then drive to the place and then make sure we had adequate time to bring mm-hmm. her out of the car and all of this. So, you know, but it was a learning experience and we took it in that light.
Wonderful. That's beautiful. So when you took Reiki from Hawaii Otakata, then did you begin to treat yourself?
Yes, I tried to be a practitioner. I do realize that I think the more we can practice, the better we get, like anything else.
Yeah.
But it was a start, yes, and I do think that it did help the child.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, try to do it for myself, you know, even just like just before I go to sleep, and then before you know it, I'm sleeping, and then so you go, well, did you do any treatment for yourself? And you go, well, I hope my hand was on my body somewhere so that I got treatment, you know. You know?
Right, right. But I would assume that it really supported you in keeping centered and at peace with the situation, because it seems like it would be very... it would be easy to get fraught, to get upset with situations like this.
Yes, I do agree with you, and I do think that I've been very blessed to have a makeup of just do the best you can.
Uh-huh.
Because I've had people very early in my young life who said to me personally, you must have done something bad, that's why you have a child like this.
Oh, terrible.
Very terrible. But I answered that person who was supposed to be very religious, and I said, I cannot believe like you because I cannot think negative.
Right.
I choose to believe that we were so good that she said, I want to come to you.
Wonderful.
And that's how we took it to me, and that's how we try to practice Reiki today. Just do the best you can every day.
That's a beautiful way of looking at it, because there aren't very many families who would be able to hold a child like that, so special. And there's a gift, I think, in every life, and the giving and the receiving of that life. And she came to, I think, this is my impression, she came to give a gift to you. We don't know what that gift is, but maybe at some point in your life you'll find out.
I think so, and I think there will be a deeper meaning to it. However, I think on a basic level, a sense of appreciation for life itself is already there. That,
yes.
That she came and we said, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of life she had, we're just trying to make it a better life for her, and in the process, we know that that's how we should look at life.
Right.
Make the best you can with whatever you have. Like the saying goes, if you've got a bunch of lemons, make lemonade. Don't just be so negative about the whole thing.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, we're very blessed. We think we're blessed.
Wonderful. So when you were, when you went to the class, what was it like to take Reiki?
You know, every time I went to that class, it was only a one session class, but when we went, we sat in these chairs, and there were like maybe 9 chairs, so 3, 3, 3. And my mother and my father and my husband kind of sat in the back, and I sat in the front. And this other gal was on the side. So I guess 9, maybe 12, and 3 on. So at this class that we went to, there was another girl that I've kept in contact with. And I don't know what the other lady's name was. I just don't know what that other lady's name was. But, you know, for me, when I pray, if you want to call it pray, or when I practice Reiki, I don't necessarily keep my eyes open all the time.
Right.
So when I received the transition of the lesson, I'm really not quite, I just felt like I was like, you know, there, I'm trying to be an open vessel, I'm trying to just receive whatever was being given to me
uh-huh. or,
in the transition of the uh-huh. of the ability to be helping others. And it wasn't like a lightning bolt or anything like that. It was more calm, like, I think it was more like at peace.
Uh-huh. Beautiful.
I think it was more like peaceful. Uh-huh. You know, just being there and, I think, accepting whatever the transition was. I think it was more peaceful.
Uh-huh. And did she teach you hand positions and so on?
Yes, she did do the hand positions, and we worked on that. And I think I've come to the point now in my life, and you can correct me if this is wrong, that, you know, it's where you place your hand. It's not that you have to do it necessarily in the order that it was first taught. Let's say, for example, you're on the side that maybe it's a huge man, and you can't put your hands across him like this because he's double the body size that your poor little palms are. And so you just do what you can, maybe on half his body, and then turn around and go to the other side and complete the therapy by doing the other half.
Uh-huh.
So in the old days, it was like, if it was on me, I might put my two hands right across my chest and slowly move my hands down and slowly move my hands down. But if it's a man twice the size, I think the concept now, as I have picked up on the practicing part, is just put your hands wherever they are in whatever kind of sequence that you will remember, so that the therapy is done in as complete a manner as you can. You know, so so if I could do two eyes at one time with both my hands, maybe I would. But let's say I couldn't for some reason or another, then I would do one eye with one hand, and when I got around to the other side of the body, I'd complete the therapy by treating the other eye.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I think at that point, by going to the other side of the body to treat the eye, it wouldn't have to be with the same right hand. It could be right hand or left hand. And I do remember that Hawaii Takata said that you can even treat animals. And she said, you know, like, you don't have to touch the little bird, but you can put your hand above or below so that the bird was encircled by the ability to transition the healing that you would want to have transitioned.
Cool. That's nice.
And I can even feel it right now.
Yeah. So, let's see, 1977. So that's a long time to have Reiki. Let's see, 35 years?
Something like that. 35 years. Yeah. And I think it's, I want your listeners to know that the more they practice, the better they get. That sometimes we're also quick to say, I got nothing out of this course, whatever course, anything, whether learning how to type. If you don't practice typing, you'll never get good as a typist. So I want them to learn that if they can practice anytime, anywhere, you don't have to tell anybody what you're doing. You know, you're sitting in the bus going to work or something, and you just put your hand on your chi area, you're giving yourself chi.
Right.
You know, and that will make you a better practitioner down the road. And it's like everything else, the more you practice, the better you get.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I do think, you know, as the years are going along, I'm getting better. So now that I'm getting in that area where I can slowly spend more time and devote it to myself and do whatever I need to do.
Right.
I want to become a better practitioner, and I want to be doing it on a regular basis, almost like people who, you know, get up every day and meditate. I think if we can get up every day and say, oh, yeah, we're going to meditate, but we're also going to give ourselves Reiki, I think we'll be a healthier generation down the road, too.
That's great. How did your mother and father take to Reiki?
You know, they were very accepting people. They were in Mrs. Takata's age bracket.
Right.
So I think they really got along. But my mother was, as they say in Japanese, jimina. She would be quiet. She was a strong woman, just like Mrs. Takata was a strong woman. Unassuming kind of thing. You would never know if you saw these two ladies walking down the street about the knowledge they had or the ability they had.
Right.
So my mother, in her own way, was a strong person. And Mrs. Takata, in her own way, was a strong person. But in some ways, they were very much alike. You know, they're quiet, unassuming, very knowledgeable people.
Uh-huh.
And my father, I think, too, for him to accept, you know, something like this, I think he wasn't adverse to any kind of learning. So I'm sure that he, you know, thought about it. Whether mm-hmm. or not he physically did any kind of practicing or not, I don't know, except that I do know that he believed in the power of God and the power of healing and power of prayer. So I'm sure in his own quiet way, unbeknownst to me, he probably was doing some of those things uh-huh. along the way, too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I can remember her in the classes, and she really seemed to be very emphatic about how to practice and had such confidence in Reiki. You know, I have to say that I don't know if I've arrived at this confidence. And mostly her confidence was because she treated people a lot and treated people with all different kinds of conditions. Did she treat Celeste?
She did treat Celeste. I tried to think about this because somebody said, did she ever charge you? And I said, no, she never charged me. So I think she did it out of the kindness and generosity of her heart, because she, if you know the Usui story too, they always tell you, you should charge somebody something, otherwise they don't appreciate the value of yep. what you have.
Yeah, but that's a message that's come loud and clear.
Yep, but she did it, and I'm not sure. I guess in life we all make exceptions, and maybe this was just an exception, but I think not, you know, because I think in Linda's case, Linda Sakuma, the person who lives
yeah.
down, I think she treated her ill son, too, for
uh-huh.
free. I think
uh-huh.
that's it. But consequently, we're strong believers, and maybe that was the gift we give back to her, in that my second daughter's name is Hope Reikyo Kimura. And I know that Linda named her daughter, I'm not sure what the first name was, maybe Alyssa Hawayo
uh-huh.
Sakuma. So we embraced the concept to such a degree that we were willing to pass that name on.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. So Reikyo is your second daughter's second name.
That's right. So my daughter's name is Hope Reikyo Kaimi Pono Kimura. And
wow.
Kaimi Pono is seeker of righteousness. So if I think about what name Celeste had, that was very accommodating, becoming to her. And when I think about what I would like for Hope's name to be, it's very accommodating and becoming to her.
Wonderful. So just for your listeners' understanding, so her daughters have what we might call an English first name, and then a Japanese name, and then a Hawaiian language name, and then the last name.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's
beautiful.
Right. I thought it was important
uh-huh.
to know who they were, where they came from, and try to incorporate it in the
uh-huh.
name.
Well, you know, my for the listeners, you probably saw my name, Phyllis Lei Furumoto. And so I didn't get a Japanese name, but I got a Hawaiian name, Lei. And this name has in some way haunted me and been really an interesting name, because in English, of course, it has, for adolescents, it has very sexual connotation. And then for, and now I, when I come to Hawaii, I am given oftentimes leis, which are a garland of flowers that people make, beautiful, beautiful flowers. And it's a sign of really a very special kind of feeling. Love is I think love isn't really all of what it means. Aloha is is the word, but I can't explain to you what aloha really means. Can you help me with aloha?
Well, they said aloha means hello and goodbye, so I could tell you aloha,
right.
in that meaning welcome.
Right.
And I could say aloha, as in I'll see you again, goodbye for now.
Right.
So aloha can be used in those two different ways, I think. And, you know, the fact that you have that beautiful name, Lei, you know, it means it's an encirclement of love, too.
Uh-huh.
Because it allay is a circle of uh-huh. flowers.
Right. Right. But I also thought that aloha meant a kind of love, like it is a greeting and it is a goodbye. But it also, there's a saying in Hawaii, live aloha.
Mm-hmm.
And it means to live a kind of brotherhood kind of energy or feeling.
Yes.
Yeah?
I do.
That's
I do
very, very special.
Yes, that is live aloha. Yes, that is true. That my aloha for you is my love for you.
Yeah.
You know, that type
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah. Beautiful. So it's wonderful. Your names for your children, really thoughtful.
Well, you know, you have to think hard and long when you've got a name like Kimura because it's so common.
I see. So you have a third daughter.
I have a third daughter. Her name is Joy, and her middle name is Kei, K-E-I, which means blessed. And her Hawaiian middle name is Ku'u'ipo.
Oh, sweetheart.
Yes, sweetheart. And so the first two names were given to us miraculously by Mary Kavena Pukui because I was taken to visit her by another good friend who asked Mrs. Pukui and said, this lady has, you know, Celeste, and now she has Joy. So when I had Celeste, she explained about Celeste to her, and she thought about a name for Celeste, and this is the Kale Aloha, which is the lay of love.
Uh-huh.
And then when she talked about Hope, she gave her the name Ka'imipono, Seeker of Righteousness. But when Joy came along, poor Joy, Mrs. Pukui was unavailable. So I had to think, oh, what am I going to name her? So we had thought about several names, but when I was in the hospital, unbeknownst to me, the person who was attending me, her name was Ku'u'ipo. So
wow.
Yeah, I know. So here I am in labor, and you're going, oh, yep, okay, the baby's there, you know, pain and all this other stuff. And then in the back, I'd hear, Ku'u'ipo, how you doing? And she said, I'm fine, we're doing fine. So, you know, inadvertently, this name kept coming up. Somebody else is calling Ku'u'ipo, I'm hearing it, and I'm going, yes, that's the name, we'll go with Ku'u'ipo.
Yeah.
So you never know why, you know, things are the way they are, you know, but it is.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
actually a very common Hawaiian name, sweetheart, but for us it had a lot of meaning. And I don't think that the nurse at that time ever, because I didn't really get the lady's last name, and I didn't name her after her, but the concept of sweetheart and what it meant for us was there.
Wow, yeah. Beautiful.
Yes.
Well, you know, in Hawaii, names are very important.
Yes.
It's not just something that you pull out of a hat. And it's been a very interesting cultural experience for me. And your naming of your daughters has been really a wonderful example of that. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Is there anything else to say?
Well, I think all parents try to give the best possible name they can for their children with whatever thoughts they have behind the names they choose. And for us, you know, it started with Celeste because of her disabilities. And we were so blessed to have the advice of Mary Pukui to give us the Hawaiian name, plus at that point, you know, we didn't think anything about the Reiki part. But after that, you know, because Reiki meant so much to us that, and, you know, my husband didn't really practice it. He doesn't really practice it, I think. I think he means well, but he doesn't really, you know, go give the Reiki. And he has
uh-huh.
and he has taken the course and everything. But I said, oh, I'd like to name her Reikio, after Mrs. Hawaii Katakata and the concept. And he said, yeah, you know. So I was very lucky that he agreed that it was important enough that he could live with that choice that, you know, I
beautiful.
Had.
Beautiful.
You know.
Beautiful. So, Vivian, I'd like to return again to my grandmother, and I understand that you had other contact with her besides just taking this class. I'm a little bit surprised that the class was only one day because, of course, in my time, during the same period, she would teach in four sessions, one session each day for four consecutive days. And she was very adamant about it. So it's interesting that she did just one day. So maybe it was because you're from Honolulu and Japanese and you knew half the stuff beforehand. I don't know.
Well, you know, I have to think about this now because if you say it was that long, I don't know if it was that long.
Well, it could be not.
It could be longer. I mean, could have been 2-3 days. I'm thinking at this point, I can only remember it as being one day.
You know, well, vividly. It's possible.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things about my grandmother that is very interesting and is hard for people to hold is that she had so much experience in teaching and treating people that she really took people as individuals. You know, it was, I saw her, for instance, prepare and teach masters. And though all of us had essentially the same training, it was done very differently, and it was done in a different way, and what she asked of people was different. And of course, she was at the end of her lifetime, which means a lot, because, you know, I think you make decisions when you think, well, I might not be here next year. Mm-hmm. So that was also another interesting factor. Mm-hmm. So, but besides the class, then did you take second degree Reiki?
No, I didn't take second degree with her, but I would have liked to have, and I've taken second degree from somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
I did take second degree.
Oh, kind of what we might call modern master.
Yes, I think it's a modern master. By the old Reiki standards, I think it's a modern master.
Good. Yes.
And but, you know, it was such that I wanted to, at that time, slowly increase my knowledge, too. I had reached a point in my life where I was comfortable with where I am at Reiki 1, but then I wanted to do Reiki 2. Uh-huh. So I went on and I did take Reiki 2.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And did you have, did you have contact with my grandmother after you took your first degree? And because she was treating your daughter, right?
Yes. So she treated my daughter. I'm not quite sure how long she treated Celeste, but she treated her, you know, quite a while. And I would be driving. I had a part-time job. So I was a part-time mom with a part-time job. So I would drive to her residence along the Alawai Canal, and in the process of doing that, I think we built up a nice relationship. I mean, she didn't ask me to do anything for her, you know, like go to the grocery store or anything like that, but she did ask me advice on her teeth because my father was a dentist.
Uh-huh.
So if this is not disclosing something I don't think she would want me to tell.
She was quite proud of her teeth, really.
Okay. She actually, I think, had been looking for a dentist and just didn't know where to go about. And knowing that she knew me and that our family was a family dentist kind of thing, I did take her to visit my father several times to help her situation. And my father's style is kind of like your grandmother's style. I think he was one of these kinds of people. Oh, family dentists, but they come so far. So if they don't mind waiting 1 or 2 hours, I want to do more for them than just have them go home and then come back a second time and then go home and come back a second time. So when she and I, you know, when I went to pick her up, I drove to pick her up and I willingly also drove to take her back and all of this. We would have to discuss, can you give a couple of hours, you know, so that we could do more for you within that period of time. And so we did have her dental situation resolved for her. I hope she was happy. I think she was.
Yeah, you know? I think so too.
And you know, I think she was.
Yeah. And what did you talk about when you were in the car with her? Do you remember? Just daily stuff?
Yeah, just daily stuff. We never really talked about personal stuff like, what did you do today? Did you heal anybody or help heal anybody? we didn't really do that kind of stuff.
No.
It was just a friendly kind of
wonderful
thing, that just companionable type of thing. You know, she had somebody she could just talk to, and, she and I just talked like
uh-huh.
that.
Uh-huh. And then do you remember when she moved to Iowa?
No, I don't remember when she moved to Iowa. She didn't call me up and say, I'm moving. She did say that she had her daughter and her granddaughter, you, and your father there in Iowa. And her thing was, I went like, oh, but if I need to get in touch with you, how do I get in touch with you? Oh, everybody knows me. Just send it, Hawaii Takata, Kiyosakua, Iowa. I said, oh, okay. You know, I guess Kiyosakua, Iowa was such a small place, I guess, or small enough that anybody would have known who it was without having to know your father's
yes.
last name or
yes.
anything, you know.
Yeah.
She says, just send it, Hawaii Takata. Iowa. I go, okay.
Well, you know, back in those days, our town was so small. It was a little country town in Iowa, and we didn't have street names. So there was no street address. And we didn't have zip codes in those days, so there was no zip code to remember. And, in fact, our telephone numbers, of course, were just three numbers. You know, so, you know, we just dialed three numbers, and then it got enlarged to four numbers, and then seven numbers, and then, of course, now we have all these numbers, and we're part of the grid, as it were, as far as mail and phone. But back then, it was very, very simple, and it's true that she was the only Hawaii Takata in town, and the post office knew who she was and where she was. Yeah. Yeah.
And I never really had an opportunity. There was no need for me to call, if I'm sure, or write. And I'm sure if I needed to, I would have. But at that point, you know, I was just doing what I needed to do, and I didn't really have to. But I do remember her telling me that she really liked the town, you know. She
yeah.
went to the library, and she'd do whatever it
right.
is. And so she enjoyed the town, too. I think
yeah.
it was nice. And really, when you think that she was in Hawaii, and there were so much traffic, even for back then and everything else, it goes to show you her adaptability, I think, to accept anything that she knew was right for
uh-huh,
her.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. I think she moved there in 1978.
Oh.
Soon after. So I wonder if it wasn't a little earlier that you met her, actually. But who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Because I remember we already had Celeste, and that's why all of us went. But maybe it might have been earlier that we had met, but my cousin said it was like,
right?
About, he said it was like 75 or 76, and was it 75 or 77? Yeah, 677.
We have a little prompter here.
1976.
Name of Carolyn.
1976, I guess, 76.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to say about Hawaii Takata and, you know, just being with her at this point?
You know, I think it was just a privilege, and I think that it was meant to be for me to be part of an experience with her in that respect. And in that respect, I'll always be grateful that I know Reiki and that I can practice it.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, Vivian.
No, thank you.
Thank you. And for all of you out there, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.